This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Bombshell allegations dropping today in the world of Alec Murdaugh as his attorneys request a new trial with very legit concerns and reasoning for the request. According to the filing, Colton County Clerk of Court Rebecca Hill instructed jurors not to be misled by evidence presented in the Murdaugh defense. She told jurors not to be, quote, fooled by Mr. Murdaugh's testimony in his own defense. Goes on to say Ms. Hill had frequent private conversations with a jury foreperson, a court-appointed substitution for the foreperson the jury elected for itself at the request of Ms. Hill, the motion states. Ms. Hill did these things to secure herself a book deal and media appearances that would not happen in the event of a mistrial. Goes on to say that Ms. Hill betrayed her oath of office for money and fame. These are allegations coming from the defense of Alec Murdaugh and being backed up by three sworn affidavits from two jurors and one dismissed juror. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joins us right now to discuss this breaking news and shocking moment in the case of Alec Murdaugh, which could completely reset the dials on this back to day one and a new trial. Jennifer, what's your thoughts?
Tony, my initial reaction is I'm just picking my jaw off the ground.
Yeah.
You have a clerk of courts who is really entrusted with so much information, with so much authority, with so much really ability to potentially affect a trial. And typically, though, it would never be thought of that words like this would be spoken in terms of trying to influence any juror with their personal feelings or thoughts about the evidence. I can't imagine this wouldn't end up in a mistrial unless somehow this information is proven untrue in some way by the prosecution.
And that's what's going to be happening next. They're going to have to try and prove this. The motion does cite that at least three sworn affidavits from two jurors and one from a dismissed juror, as well as excerpts from Hill's book, Behind the Doors of Justice, The Murdaugh Murders, all corroborate this information. So you have jurors saying that, yeah, Ms. Hill did say this. In part of the affidavit, it says Ms. Hill told juror number 785 that everything Mr. Murdaugh has said has been lies and that I should forget about the guns. They'll never be seen again. Ms. Hill then told juror number 785 about the views of the rest of the jury, telling her that if the foreperson would just go in and ask for a raise of hands, that this would be done and over with. And everyone needs to be on the same page. This is really shocking stuff. I mean, this is 100% tampering with a jury. And if true, I think has implications, obviously, not only for this case, but any case that has gone through this courtroom where she is the clerk.
100%. The first thing that came to mind in terms of this was just that. What other cases could she have possibly affected? What other conversations did she possibly have with jurors? This could go very deep. Again, we haven't seen, but we've got sworn affidavits, but I want to see what happens when the judge has them under oath, because I think that's what the judge will do, is have them take the stand and, you know, be questioned under oath about all of this.
Sure. These allegations have now been made and they are bombshell to the letter. What happens next here? Is this going now to another hearing where the judge will then obviously hear these arguments? How quickly does it take for a judge then to make a decision that, yeah, this is a mistrial or we're going to need to do this again in some way, shape, or form?
The judge is going to have to evaluate after the prosecution has their say in terms of whether this information is true and accurate. And after they have a chance to examine these witnesses, and I believe the judge might even have questions of these witnesses, because I can tell you that judges and their clerks and the clerks that are involved in the courts have a very close relationship with everybody involved. This is very rare and something, quite frankly, I've never heard of or seen.
Yeah. How would it be easy for a judge not to realize your clerk of court is saying these things, especially if they're being done in the way I'm reading it, passive, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking sort of way. And just, I mean, obviously you can't do that, but it doesn't seem like it was in an official capacity of let's go in front of the jury and say all this, but let's say it to specific people so that we can kind of influence here and there.
That's what he needs to get to the bottom of. I mean, first of all, if this was said, in my opinion, in any capacity, whether it was in the bathroom, whether it was in the lunch line, whether it was in passing, it's completely inappropriate, especially for someone in her capacity. And I think it would really nullify this verdict. I can't see it any other way. The only other possibility is, were any of these jurors influenced to say this, and they get on the stand and they say, I didn't really say it that way. I didn't even really say it at all. I mean, barring that happening, Tony, yeah, I think this is very significant.
Where does this put Alec then on the other charges that are being held against him? Initially, we heard that he was going to plead guilty, but then that kind of was put on pause. I'm going to guess it's because of this revelation to come out that he could, if this is retried, he could be found not guilty of murdering his wife and son. And then you have all the other charges, which could certainly put him away for life. I'm wondering, you know, is he going to try and play another long game on this of, let's see if we can get away with everything?
The federal charges are, of course, in a completely different judicial venue, yep, completely different set of facts, different in every regard. So what effect it will really happen on those charges, I don't know. I would think he certainly does have a breath of confidence, though, based on this, that he's going to get a new trial and that indeed he's going to get a second bite of the apple. So, you know, winning that trial, my guess is they won't put him on the stand, and which I believe was the reason they lost in the first place.
Sure. And the other question would then be, will the financial crimes end up into this trial as well? Because that was a big point of contention initially. Those were not going to be there. Then I believe Griffin said something, and it then opened up the door to the financial crimes being introduced into the case as well, which obviously painted a horrible picture of who Alec is as a human being.
You bring up such a great point, Tony, because what happens when this happens, if indeed they're going to get a new trial, is the defense already has played the game once. Mm-hmm. So they get to work backwards from all of their mistakes. And that is a huge mistake they made that allowed that evidence in, having Alec take the stand. They're going to get to not do that in the next trial. And there could certainly be different results.
Jennifer Coffendaffer, thank you for joining us, retired FBI special agent, and your opinion on this case as we've been following it together for the last half year. Invaluable as we now face this possible retrial of Alec Murda that now seems very possible, far more than it did just a few hours ago. We, of course, will keep you up to date here as this situation continues to develop here on the podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our updates. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast. You're consuming the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member, exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers Podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.